welcome to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast for December 19th, 2011. I'm Beth Belo, founder of the Introvert Entrepreneur. Through my business, it's a great privilege to offer coaching, training, and presentations that inspire introverts to get in touch with and leverage their natural strengths. I also help extroverts understand the introverts in their lives, whether that's at home or at work, as well as to tap into their own inner introvert. A few days ago, I was reading one of my many books full of trivia and useless knowledge. I adore these books, not only because they are easy to pick up and put down, but also because they often teach me something new that results in a different perspective on the everyday, which is information that I would consider anything but useless. In this case, the subject of my reading was the origin of fairy tales in various children's stories. I happened upon the story behind The Princess and the Pea, and it fit perfectly in today's podcast. In this day and age, being sensitive is sometimes regarded as being weak or emotional or thin-skinned. You hear some people say, "Stop being so sensitive," as if it were a disgrace to not only have feelings, but to show them. This was not the case with The Princess and the Pea. On the contrary, sensitivity was a signal that a person was of royal blood. Think about that. It was not only desirable, it was a mark of nobility to be sensitive. What happened between those days and these? On the one hand, we lament about a lack of sensitivity and a lack of regard for others' feelings in our society. On the other, we think it's goofy to see someone cry while watching ice skating competitions, which of course I never do, or think that they're overreacting to everyday crashes, bangs, and bumps. There are those among us, especially among us introverts, for whom emotions, feelings, sensations, and the environment play a profound role in how we relate to the world. We are HSPs, or highly sensitive people, and we are fortunate to have today's guest, Annie Axford, speaking out and providing services on our behalf, as well as helping us to honor our gifts and be compassionate with our challenges. Annie Axford is the CEO and founder of Sensitive and Thriving, Inc. She is a highly sensitive person who is also a high sensation-seeking, introverted, entrepreneurial, and a licensed mental health and relationship therapist who specializes in working with highly sensitive persons. Annie offers holistic lifestyle services for the full spectrum of sensitive people, from those who are struggling with disorder to those who are thriving and want to lead. This includes coaching, therapy, classes, groups, workshops on nutrition, money, business, spirituality, emotions, relationships, the subconscious, and more. She offers these services both online and in person in New York City. She has a Bachelor of Science degree in Family and Human Development and Psychology, a Master of Science degree in Marriage and Family Therapy, a Marriage and Family Therapy license in New York State, over 450 hours in clinical hypnotherapy training, and a clinical hypnosis certification, Blissborn Hypnosis Educator. On top of all of that, Annie has participated in a year of entrepreneur business training and Marie Forleo's Adventure Mastermind program. Hi, Annie. Thank you so much for joining me for this podcast conversation today.
Yes, thanks for having me, Beth.
Well, you specialize in working with HSPs, or highly sensitive people. What does it mean to be an HSP?
Well, that's a big question. It can mean a lot of things, but in a measurable scientific meaning, that you have a more highly sensitive nervous system. So you're picking up on more details in the environment. And Elaine Aaron, who studies it and coined that term for high sensitivity, high sensory processing, found that there are basically four things that a highly sensitive person does. So you can remember the DOES, that it's depth of processing, overstimulation, emotional sensitivity, and sensory sensitivity. So having a highly sensitive nervous system can affect all these different aspects of your life. So it can be a large explanation or, but that's the most succinct scientific explanation.
Yeah. Would you mind saying what the DOES stands for again?
Uh-huh. It stands for depth of processing, overstimulation, emotional sensitivity, and sensory sensitivity.
I was just reading there was a recent Psychology Today article about HSP, and it was interesting because they said that it can often be also or confused or collapsed with introversion, which I thought was interesting because from my understanding, there's certainly not all HSPs are introverts, but there are certainly more HSPs that are introverts than extroverts.
Yes, and it is a common thing. I think that they estimate about 70% of HSPs are introverted and 30% are extroverted. And so it is not the same thing, but sometimes it can seem the same because of that tendency for overstimulation. When you're taking in all that information, you do still need some time alone, time to recharge and basically unplug, and which can often look similar to introversion.
And I would think it would be it would probably almost be painful to be an HSP extrovert because it's like I need the stimulation and at the same time I get overstimulated.
Yeah, I've heard people describe it as almost like one foot on the gas pedal, one foot on the brake, where it's like they want to be out and be interacting with people, but then at the same time, then they get overwhelmed, it's too much. And so, yeah, kind of it's a tricky thing to get enough stimulation to be meeting your needs. And I think it's usually kind of a fine line when you cross it. And it's like, oh, I'm done.
Yeah, exactly. You just know. It's like that hit the wall or whatever it is. Yeah, and it seems like that might, again, it's providing information in terms of you can't judge a book by its cover. And so just because somebody is getting overstimulated by too many people or too much activity doesn't mean when they're ready to go, it's like, oh, that must be an introvert. It could be all sorts of things, including HSP. Mm-hmm. Or they're just tired. You know,
right.
That happens to all of us. Yeah. So I know that, you know, most of us, HSP is a fairly relatively new term. I mean, you know, in terms of our slapping labels on things, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so most of us, at least of our age, didn't grow up knowing that, oh, I'm an HSP, or had anybody explain that to us. So how did you come to realize that you were an HSP, and what difference has that knowledge made in your life?
Yeah. Well, it's been profound. And I would add that there have been different pieces of it that were really helpful, and understanding introversion was really helpful for me as well. So I think I found out because I kind of just had this feeling of being very different and also withdrawn and not quite sure how to interact always with people, and feeling not a deep connection with my body, feeling often just very analytical and not even having an understanding of myself in the context, not understanding, you know, I could understand the overarching concepts of a situation, and I could understand the concept that I was a person in the situation, but I didn't actually feel myself in the situation and what I wanted and kind of who I was. And so I was really out of touch with my body in that way, and I started having a number of health issues. I started really experiencing a lot of fatigue, and what I thought was depression and anxiety. And so I studied mental health. I'm a licensed therapist. So I studied psychology and marriage and family therapy and really tried to understand more about myself that way. And that helped. That was beneficial. I got to understand a little bit more about personality types and systems. And then it was really, though, when I first understood about gluten sensitivity. My grandfather was diagnosed with celiac disease when he was much older. He had suffered with all kinds of health issues his whole life, and they finally realized it was related to his intolerance to gluten, which is the protein in wheat. And so that was really curious to me that it was called a gluten sensitivity, not a gluten allergy, or, you know, they weren't even implying that it was a problem, just that this is the way his body is set up. And that was really intriguing to me. And then I slowly, you know, over researching and coming across more information, realized that I was like that in a lot of areas of my life. I was just more sensitive. And then eventually came across the work of Elaine Aron. And it dramatically changed my life to really have an understanding. It was very liberating. I think a lot of people can find liberation in lots of different ways in your life, and it doesn't necessarily mean acquiring a label, but I think sometimes when we can give ourselves those labels, it allows for a new sense of understanding that it's like, oh, okay, I'm not the only one going through this, and it lets us let go of what's wrong with me or am I right or am I wrong, and really just start to try and understand ourselves. And so for me, it was very much that. It gave me access to a lot of resources and then also kind of just permission to really be the way that I am and really explore that more. And then now, I mean, I can't even imagine, like I look at my life even a couple of years ago, my whole life now is surrounded by wonderful, sensitive people doing awesome things who are very empowered in their sensitivity. And so I feel very grateful for that, that my work has led me here and that I get to live my life in a way that, that works so much for me now.
Well, congratulations about that. Because it's such a gift, and that you had the curiosity to seek out the information is really powerful. And the more information we have, the more choices we have.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you've been able to make some choices. And I think knowing this kind of information would allow you to make choices around, you know, where you live, how you set up your living environment, who you're living with, what kinds of choices you make in terms of your, you know, profession or your professional surroundings and all sorts of things, or even just what kinds of activities drain you or give you energy. It's so valuable to know this, because then, like you said, you have some, I don't know, you've got some grounding that's like, oh, this isn't weird. This is just me. and it's mm-hmm. something that is not, it's not something wrong with me. It's just something different. And I should pay attention to it.
Right. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned also that, of course, you're an introvert as well. And how did you discover that, or what was your journey in terms of claiming your introversion?
Well, I would say that actually my relationship with my husband now was one of the biggest catalysts for that. He's more extroverted than I am, and it was an interesting process within understanding also, you know, my sensitivity, understanding how I'm picking up on things and what do I do with that and what does that mean, but then also really the difference in the way that he and I interact and the difference in our needs and our desires, and really feeling okay with myself in a relationship too, because it was compounded by the sensitivity, you know, needing space alone, but also I guess just kind of my slow to warm up nature that I need to just kind of sit with something, and also very much needing time alone, that I used to feel really guilty about it. And I used to, you know, in relationships, people would feel that I was withdrawing, and I used to judge myself for it very much too. Like, yeah, what's wrong with me? Why can't I just always stay out? Why can't I just, you know, be here with people? Why do I have to kind of retreat? And so then I did develop a lot of guilt around it. And so then I would actually withdraw and kind of preemptively avoid being in situations in case it became too much for me and that I didn't want people to feel that I was leaving them or withdrawing from them. So it's been a really great understanding to have in my relationship and in a lot of my friendships as well, that I just recharge by going inside. And that, you know, some of the books, you know, I read, oh, now her name just left me. She wrote The Introvert and Extrovert in Love. And then she wrote...
is it Marty Olson Laney? Who wrote,
yeah. Her books were really, really helpful in that regard to understand kind of the source of my energy and where it's coming from, and also that's okay. And not just giving up on it, but really finding out, okay, so I do want to have relationships with extroverts. How do I do this? And how do I do this in an intentional way where I'm really meeting my own needs so that I can connect with them too in a way that feels good for them as well.
So you've started to answer what my next question is about, you know, if I'm an introvert and an HSP, what considerations are important for me? And you've touched on a few there, and I wonder what else is important?
Well, I think there can be a really great tendency when you're an introvert and an HSP to get stuck in what I call analysis paralysis. And I've noticed you would definitely address this on your website and with your resources, which I think is great, that not only are you going inside to recharge and to process and to deal with, you know, your whole day, but also you've got this wealth of information and stimulation that you've picked up on throughout the day that you also have to process. And so I noticed that this would affect me and a lot of the clients that I work with in creating experiences of seeming anxiety and perhaps eventually leading to anxiety, as well as insomnia. And because there's so much processing going on, and that I learned how valuable meditation or even like yoga, just really giving myself scheduled time every day to just literally like decompress and just let that stuff work through my system, that otherwise, and I notice when I start to analyze things too much, I'm like, okay, I'm not giving myself an outlet for all that I'm taking in. And that when I don't do that, then I end up staying up later at night trying to handle that. And my body's trying to do that and kind of download all of that. So I think really, I would say that's like the biggest piece, is giving yourself specifically that space to be aware of when you are getting too much into your thoughts, into your head, and really engaging in something. Engaging, because that's my tendency, is I can think about things all day long. So really making myself move and get into my body and have a space to do that.
Well, you're highlighting something I've found myself saying over and over again in various safe gatherings, where I say, you know, sometimes I forget that I exist below the neck, because I can live so much in my head. And so when you talked about the depth of processing and some of the other things with the HSP, I thought, you know, there's definitely a connection there. And I appreciate you pointing out that there's not only the internal information that we need to process, there's the external information that's coming at us. And that can be overwhelming if we don't make that time to decompress. One of the things that you talk about that I'm intrigued by is the highly sensitive hierarchy of needs. So I wonder if you can tell us a little bit more about that and why it's maybe important for entrepreneurs and leaders in particular to know about it.
Definitely. In the psychology field, there's a common theory of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Maslow studied this theory, and different people have expounded upon it and expanded it. So he started it out with a 5-stage model, and now the one that I find is the most detailed and most accurate is an 8-stage model. And he basically theorized that we move through a hierarchy of needs. So, and I think it's pretty intuitive as well, and similarly matches what people look at with like chakras, that first, we have to have our physical needs met before we can then meet our safety needs. And then once our safety needs are met, feeling like there's rules and laws, then we can meet our love and belonging needs. And then once we feel that we love and belong, that we're loved and we belong, then we can meet our self-worth or self-esteem needs. And then start to look at cognitive needs, meaning and purpose and understanding. And then aesthetic needs, kind of understanding of like beauty, what's beautiful to us and what we like. And then we can come to a place of self-actualization, really reaching our full potential, and then self-transcendence, understanding ourselves as part of a whole. And so what I've come to understand, though, is that highly sensitive people move through that backwards. And that, like you said, we can have a tendency to kind of live above the neck. That, I mean, even if you want to look at it, like I said, with the chakras in mind or even the body in mind, that as a human being develops, of course, we're actually inclusive of all these stages at once, you know, where you wouldn't be alive if you weren't eating or meeting some of your physical needs. But as far as feeling satisfied with it, that I find it works the other way for sensitive people. So that we start out very like self-transcendent. We don't necessarily have a sense of ourselves because we're picking up on all this stimulation that we're aware of ourselves as a conduit to information, and that it requires effort on our part to really then whittle ourselves down to self-actualization of really understanding, oh, I'm a person. I'm here in this body too. I can understand the world conceptually, but I also have a place in it. I am a person. And then moving from there into, oh, and what are my wants? What are my desires? What do I think is beautiful? Rather than just kind of objectively observing things, really seeing what feels good to me in this body. And then being able to understand your purpose from there, your cognitive needs. And then once you understand that, then you can start to understand your worth, that you are this unique person with this unique set of DNA and this unique vision and view of the world and desires and therefore things to offer, and that that's your value. And once you understand that, then you can experience a sense of love and belonging, that people want you around specifically just to be in your presence. And then once you get that, then you can start to feel safe in the world, feel that there's some rules, some order, and then really meet your physical needs in a way that feels good to you, be able to make money and feed your body and exercise your body in a way that makes sense. So we tend to work backwards in that way. And I think it can be really tricky because, like you said, we do want a sense of grounding, coming into the world so open and expansive and feeling so much and having so much information. It's like, what do we do with all of this? How do I live? And that we often will want something to really ground us because it feels so out there. And being able to connect in this way and work through it this way, I have found it's a way that people can really lead in the most powerful way. So first of all, leading their own lives, letting themselves follow their sensitivity through this, and then also whatever it may be doing, maybe that you're doing in the world, that then you get to lead others in a process of coming from a point of sensitivity and honoring that rather than feeling that you have to first focus on, you know, the money or the very practical things when it doesn't even necessarily have a meaning for you yet.
I think you just changed my life. That was amazing. I mean, I'm just thinking about it. And on a baseline level, what crosses my mind is, oh my gosh, no wonder I forget to take Advil when I have a headache. You know, I mean, really, it sounds very simplistic, but that's what popped into my head. It's because, you know, I'm so fixated on these other higher things that I'm not taking care of my physical needs.
And it's so true. And that's why I think a lot of sensitive people judge themselves for it, because they feel like this should be basic. How do I forget to eat? How do I forget to take Advil, you know? And that actually, I think it's very relieving. Again, like we said, having more understanding offers more choices. Then you get to realize, no, that's not going to be your strength. You're not naturally going to connect all the way down to your body. You have to bring yourself through that. And that, yeah, the more you do it, the more it can become habitual and you set up systems for yourself to do that. But that, no, it's not going to be obvious for you.
Well, and it strikes me that knowledge allows you to have so much more compassion for yourself.
Yeah.
Instead of judging or beating up on yourself for like, oh, why didn't I do that? Or why do I always forget? Or even letting other people kind of beat you up for it,
right.
You know, or cajole you or guilt you into, you know, those kinds of things. And, you know, you should really be taking better care of yourself and all of that. And whether you're saying it to yourself or somebody else is saying it to you, this really shifts, at least for me, and I'm guessing probably more than one person listening, the way I see that now. That's very cool. I'm kind of speechless.
I'm glad. Well, and that's the thing, is it is simple and it makes a lot of sense, but it's something that I realized that, because I noticed, that, I mean, the thing that I first noticed was that sensitive people tend to need, in a sense, to choose their childhood, that it's not always our tendency to play or to just, we may have playful personalities or be incredibly creative or artistic, but that a lot of times we forget to just be, and that we can so easily be so analytical, and that just really understanding this process, like you said, eliminates a lot of judgment or comparison, either from the inside or the outside, that it is simplistic, yet sometimes the last thing we do, and that it really makes a huge difference. Like if you're up there at the top, really feeling anxious or frustrated or unclear about what you want, it feels like nothing's going to resolve that. It feels like this is a huge problem and I don't know what to do about it, and so we can stay up there with it. But that if you let yourself really move through that and connect it down to that ground-based level where you're really acting on what you want and bringing it into a physical presence, that you can resolve things really quickly. And so it's simple, yet it is so important for sensitive people to understand that they do develop and process in a completely backwards way than 80% of the population.
Well, what you were just sharing brought up for me a book I'm reading right now, which is called Switch. Have you encountered this book?
Somebody else was just telling me about it, but I don't remember it. What it is?
Yeah, well, it's by Chip and Dan Heath, and they're brothers, and it's about making change when change is hard. I think is something that's a variation on the subtitle. But what occurred to me as you were talking was that one of the things that they pound home is that often we try to match complex problems with complex solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And what you were just sharing there was it can seem like something is a big thing. It's a big thing in your life. It's complicated, all of that. And sometimes if we just drop down and we get to the real simple solution, it might seem like, well, is it really that simple? Yeah, sometimes it really is. and mm-hmm. they've found time and time again that when you do that, when you boil down something to its essence and you get to the core, then often the solution is pretty simple. And when you can embrace that instead of charts and graphs and analytical approaches, you can actually make change that lasts and make choices that stand the test of time.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, I recommend the book. I think you would like it.
Okay. Yeah. I will definitely check it out. Somebody else is recommending it to me as well.
You know, I feel like, like I said, speechless, because the rest of my questions are good, but I feel like I need to process what I just learned here, but I will move on. So once we know this information about ourselves, especially if we turn that hierarchy of needs upside down and whatnot, how do we create an environment that supports those needs? Especially, like you said, when, 80% of the world is moving in the opposite direction.
Well, I think part of it that seems so tricky is that if you've been trying to live like 80%, then you're probably surrounded by a lot of things that don't work for you. And so I know for myself, when I started there, it was really just starting with no, that I let myself for the first time say, no, I don't know what my yes is, but I know I don't want to keep doing this. I know that I don't feel good when I do this, or I know that this isn't working for me. And it doesn't have to be about judgment. It doesn't have to be, I'm not going to do that because that person's a bad person, or, it can just be, this just isn't for me. And I realize I don't feel good when I do it. And that I find once you let yourself really start to say no to things, I think that's a really scary point to be at, because it feels like in your mind what you're balancing out is, I'll have either nothing or this thing that I don't really like that much, but at least it's something. And so, of course, you're going to want to stay with what you know, what feels comfortable, rather than feeling like you're going to have nothing in that place, whether that's friendships or work or what you're doing in your free time. But that I find that when you really let yourself make space, let yourself, rather than trying to get more in your life, but actually just make space, release all of the things that aren't, just 100% yeses, then you get to just kind of bring in things that are yeses, and that they can just show up for you more, and that it doesn't have to be, again, like you're talking about the simple solutions. I think sometimes when we find something's out of alignment for ourselves, it's like, okay, I've got to correct this. I've got to fix this. I've got to take action. But that really just relieving yourself of the things that aren't working allows for new possibilities to come in. And that I think once you're free of a lot of those things that aren't working, you also give yourself mental and physical permission to start playing, to start exploring. And instead of focusing on what's the right thing for me to be doing, you get to say, what do I want to be doing? What feels good to me? And there don't have to be rights and wrongs about it. Because chances are that if you're highly sensitive, that you, and especially introverted, you know, you're processing things on a very deep level. The way you're going to want to do things may not exist already in the world. There may not be anybody else doing it. And so it will require you kind of in a way to be a pioneer and to go in your own direction. But so, I mean, I think that's really, you know, the starting place that you go from, you know, being in a place you don't really want to be at to saying no to, I don't know. And then eventually you get to yes. And I can speak now. I say this because I've been there and experienced it, that, like I said earlier, I'm so grateful to be surrounded by so much of what I love and want in my life. And I never would have thought this was possible, and that there is a world of sensitivity, and there are people and relationships and ways of working that can work for everybody, and that it's really just a matter of being open to that as a possibility rather than settling for something that is not working.
I appreciate you bringing up that it really is a process. We don't go from no to yes in a straight line, and that there are definitely going to be some shades of gray. And if we know that going mm-hmm. into it, then we're more likely to be able to come out the other side, like it very much sounds like you have.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I never, like when I first started understanding myself as sensitive and understanding that I wasn't living my life, it was not easy. It wasn't like I thought, oh, my life is about to get really awesome, so it's going to be easy for me to say no to all of this stuff that's in it right now. It was hard, and I did it just because I realized I can't keep doing this. This is painful to me on a lot of levels, and so I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but I know I don't want to keep doing this. And of course, I did things that I needed to do to sustain myself. I think a lot of times people hear this, like, I should quit my job tomorrow, and I should, you know, immediately cut off all ties with all my friends. I'm not advocating that, but, you know, really, but if you're really not satisfied in your job, starting to look at this as a temporary position and starting to say no to it as your long-term future and being open to then what else could come in and letting yourself be in a space of, I don't know what I'll do next, but starting to explore and play with what that might be.
Well, it's an invitation to be curious, I think,
yeah.
and aware. And that can be an uncomfortable place, or it can be a very empowering place, because sometimes I think we look around and we kind of see things again for the first time and have a new awareness about our relationship to them. And then we can move from a place of choice much more confidently and intentionally.
Yeah.
So in your work with highly sensitive people and introverts and whatnot, what do you find is at the root of the challenges that a lot of entrepreneurs encounter?
I think a lot of it has to do with focus, that it's our greatest strength to be able to generate and just stream and be flooded with great ideas and inspiration that maybe even seem like they aren't yours, you know, that you're just kind of channeling them, that they just come to you maybe even at all hours of the night, you know, when you're in the shower, that there's lots of, you know, information that you're picking up on and an understanding about how you can help, you know, what the next step of evolution is. And so I think it's a challenge with all of that information sometimes to have a focus, to let yourself really know all of that, have the big vision, see the big picture, and then channel it into productivity. So basically kind of like the hierarchy that we were talking about earlier, that it's a much easier to conceptualize of like a finished book or program or event or product than it is to actually take the steps to do it. And so our great vision is a great strength, but then not just leaving it there, letting ourselves say, okay, this is the mountain here that I want to get to the top of, and now what are the steps along the way, and letting ourselves take those each step of the way. And maybe sometimes there are course corrections, but allowing yourself to move through that. And I think the trickiness of being able to be so expansive and be with your bigness and the smallness of what you need to do in the moment at the same time. So making space for you to have big dreams and big visions, and then also to allow yourself to also be human and be in a body and recognize that in the process of that big vision, these are the steps I'm taking today, and let it feel like a relief to you, feel doable rather than like you're constantly running a marathon.
Yeah, I always think of running to stand still. And,
yeah, <you know>. Exactly.
Like, when do I feel like I'm ever going to cross any sort of finish line? Yeah, so I appreciate you talking about leaving the space for the big and the small, you know, the big vision and the details and our humanity. You know, again, I the word compassion comes up again. Granting ourselves, I always talk about space and grace, to be who we are in the moment, to meet ourselves where we're at when we're feeling less than our biggest selves. So I know that, you know, from my own experience and from my entrepreneurial friends, that we can get into a lot of comparison and competition language and feeling a little bit territorial even, dare I say. And I know that that's one of the things that you like to talk about. So tell us a little bit about how we can most effectively move from that place of comparison, which I think also brings about some of those challenges you talked about, to someplace that's more of connection.
Yeah, that is definitely something that I talk about and work with a lot. I really like Brené Brown, if you're not familiar with her. She has a great TED Talk. But I actually work with her connections curriculum. She has a 12-week curriculum that's focused on connections and shame resilience. And I think competition is at the very root of it, you know, is shame that we feel in some way that there may be something wrong with us. So we have to compete for resources or whatever it is, you know, have to try and prove that we are better than somebody else, or that at our heart we're flawed rather than valuable. And she talks about, I mean, I love even the titles of her books, The Gifts of Imperfection, that that actually it is our imperfections that are valuable, that they're not the things that would repel people, but actually the ways that we create connection. And that in my own work, I definitely find as well that the places where we feel the most pain, or even where we just, where we may experience wounding, that is the place where we feel the most, period. And that that also, therefore, is one of the places where we can really offer the most value, that there are probably also other people suffering or struggling in the same way. And so giving light and life to those wounds is very valuable. And also, you will do it in your own very unique way, because you are the only you. You're the only one with your DNA and the only one with your history and your environment and your experience. And so it does require, again, to quote Brené, ordinary courage, that when we feel like closing off or shutting off or competing or comparing, that you let yourself feel that shame, identify it as shame, identify it as fear, and then reach out instead, and be willing to be in that place of vulnerability. Of course, reaching out to people who are supportive and being able to reach out to someone and express your point of vulnerability and be able to be received and supported where you are. And in that, you get to see that you're still wanted. And that, so I think, you know, practically as an entrepreneur, another great person, another great TED Talk is Simon Sinek. And he talks about the importance of why. And this very much relates that, kind of, as an entrepreneur, your loyal customers are going to be the people who have the same why as you, that they do things for the same reasons you do things. And that those reasons come from emotionality. They don't come from the part of the brain or the part of the body that's logical or verbal. They come, you know, from feelings. And so we can only describe the effects of that. And so a lot of times, even if you're asked to describe why you do what you do, we kind of often can, well, it seems important, or, you know, and it's like we can kind of come up with some answers, but they're not really it. You know, we do it because we feel it's important. And so we do all have a why, but it's much easier to describe our how and our what. You know, I do this through a blog, or I, you know, through a program or through a book, and these are the results you'll get. And so when you let yourself be vulnerable, other people get to see your why. And so you really get to have loyal customers that aren't coming to you because they need you, because they need those results, that how and the what, but because they are a part of your tribe, because they really connect with you at that core level and share your beliefs and are brought to life by being able to reflect their own why and see their why reflected back to them.
You're making me think about one of the things I stress in my coaching, which is the importance of identifying your values. You know, what is your stake in the ground, really? And it seems to me that's part of that why that that drives us and that motivates us, is somehow living into and reflecting those core values. And the clearer we are on that, and the more vulnerable we are around it, what I'm hearing you say is the more likely we're going to attract likewise. You can spell that W-I-S-E or W-H-Y-S. We will attract likewise. So, so thank you for that. So what do you, this is the last question I want to ask to kind of wrap up this portion of our conversation. And what do you prize most about being an HSP introvert entrepreneur?
I would have to say it is my connection. I am constantly honored and amazed. I'm even getting a little teary thinking about all of the beautiful, wonderful people and courageous people that I get to connect with on a regular basis. I see my practice and all of the work that I do as an incredible gift, you know, that I get to be this partner with these other people who are living so courageously, and we really are facing the unknown together. Certainly I have tips and strategies and things that I've found that work, but those are sort of the tools and I don't ever know how we're going to use them. And so I always feel that it's a great honor and gift that I get to partner with people in this process and see their vulnerability, their strengths, their beauty, their fragility in that moment, and that they're willing to be with it so that we can experience that beauty. I love all of the people that I have in my life and that I get to interact with.
That's such a gift. And and it seems like it allows you to spend more time in that transcendence space or that self-actualization when you're, and to feel really, and the connection, it seems to me, might help a little bit with the grounding part of that when it feels like it's a little bit floaty or not pinned down, that having other people as part of the journey, people that you love and care about and that who love you, that's good stuff.
It is. That's really good stuff.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And thank you for all of your insights. I've learned so much during this call, and I'm just so excited to share it with people. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, I want to ask you one more question before we go, and it's one that I ask of all of my guests, and that is, if you were granted a year's vacation on Introvert Island, and you could only take 3 books with you, no Kindles or iPads or anything, but books, which 3 would you take with you and why?
That is an excellent question. I love to read, and I have, I'm always reading, 10 books at once. I have really been enjoying Carlos Castaneda lately. So I don't even know if I can narrow down one of his books, whichever one I haven't read yet.
There you go.
And And but I'm really, I mean, all of his books have a similar kind of explanation about or exploration of the different elements of life and how we work with all of them, the known and the unknown and that space in between. So, I mean, I really like Tales of Power. I might bring that one with me. I feel like I could read that one 50 times and still get a lot out of it.
Did you say The Tower of Power?
Sorry, Tales of Power.
Tales of Power. Okay, thank you.
And I would bring, I'd have to bring E.E. Cummings with me. He's one of my very favorite poets, and I get so much out of reading his poetry. There's a great depth and simplicity to it that I love, the different way that he uses grammar and punctuation and capitalization. And so I have his, you know, big, huge book of poetry. I'd bring that. And I think probably Julia Cameron's Artist's Way. That's been a really nice exploration for me too. And I find that's something that I can always come back to. And she's really got a nice way of expressing, you know, like we talked about some of this, these whys, these values and these things that go beyond the words that I have sometimes to really express more of that kind of the artist that I think we all have. But so those are probably my three books.
Excellent. I wish I knew how many times folks have mentioned The Artist's Way. I think there'll be, yeah. I think what I'll say is, okay, so The Artist's Way is on the island. What other, it's now part of the permanent collection because it has been such a powerful book for so many people. Yeah. So thank you for bringing that one up especially and for the other ones. And would you mind repeating the author name for the very first book you mentioned, Tales of Power?
Yes, Carlos Castaneda. It's C-A-S-T-E-N, ooh, it may be A-N-E-D-A, Castaneda.
Okay, great, thank you. Just want to make sure everybody catches that. So Annie, how can somebody learn more about you and what you have to offer?
They can go to my website, which is sensitiveandthriving.com. And I do have, I'm really excited. I'm building and getting ready to launch my Sensitive Leadership Program, which really goes into a lot more detail about that, kind of that 8-stage model of the highly sensitive hierarchy of needs and how you actually work with that. So, yeah, so check out sensitiveandthriving.com.
Awesome. Thank you. And are there links to where we can find you on any social media?
Yeah, I have, yeah, my Facebook link and Twitter link and LinkedIn link are also on there.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for me personally, because I've had a few life-changing moments here in the past 45 minutes. And thank you for sharing your expertise and wisdom with everyone today.
Yes. Thank you for having me, and thank you for what you do.
Thanks so much for listening today. This conversation has changed my life, and I hope it has given you reason for both reflection and celebration of who you are. To learn more about Annie and her services, be sure to visit her website, www.beyondthriving.com. Over the past few weeks, I've seen an increase in the number of people asking me about coaching, and there's still time to schedule your information session to see if coaching can support you in reaching your goals in 2012. It's really an investment in yourself and in your business, and it brings many rewards. I can speak to that personally from my own coaching experience, as well as the clients that I've been so fortunate to serve. So you can learn more about that, as well as the January-February group coaching experience that I've mentioned in previous podcasts, on my website, www.theintrovertentrepreneur.com. If you enjoy these podcasts, as always, I invite you to share them with friends, family, and colleagues. And please, I really appreciate and feel honored by any review that you might leave on iTunes. You can also learn more about how to hire me for coaching, trainings, and speaking engagements at theintrovertentrepreneur.com. And last but not least, please join us for more community and conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/theintrovertentrepreneur. Thank you so much for listening and for your time, and I look forward to seeing you next time.